Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.jbsba.com. I hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes on Sunday by email. Get you ready for the week ahead. And many of you tell us that that you like that because it does get you ready. Get you kind of focused on what's coming up, get your head out of the weekend into what you got to face coming up in the week ahead. Because as you know, one of the things that happens after Sunday is Friday, and that's when payroll has to be made. And so we all have to hit the ground running, don't we? I'm excited about having Jerry Idizac on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Jerry's a friend, and he's a member of the Outstanding Kiplinger Organization. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Organization. He's sitting in for Joan Pride today. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you here.
Well, it's good to be here.
You're pretty excited about that, aren't you?
I am. I can't hardly wait till for your first question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always like to remind Joan what a dream come true it is for her to be here, and she only somewhat allows me to say that. She doesn't always agree with me, or when she does it in a rather sardonic tone.
Well, frankly, I'd rather be on a golf course this morning. But
well, let's get us a tea time, and I'll go with you.
Okay.
Okay. Before we get into the letter, let's talk about some of the news. The Fed met this week, and of course, we had our Fed Watch show on earlier in the week as we've been doing now for golly, ever since we've been on the air. Jerry, we have a Fed Watch show the day that the Fed meets, where I introduce my audience to one or more economists, and we basically talk about how the economy is doing, and what the economists, and sometimes what I think the Fed is going to do. And our economist this week was Richard DeKayser of National City Bank, and he predicted correctly that the Fed would raise rates, and they did, didn't they?
They did. They did the eighth straight meeting in a row of a quarter point increase, taking it from the Fed funds rate from 1% in June of 2004 to 3% now. And, of course, the prime rate's up to 6%.
Yeah, makes the prime rate 6. And, Jerry, for small business owners, that's not, that's the wrong kind of news that we needed. I've been basically laying off of the Fed for a couple of years now because they've been keeping interest rates down, and so they've kind of been my buddies up to now. But they're starting to move over onto my bad side now, Jerry, because with the Fed funds rate at 3 and prime at 6, and the fact that small business owners live in a world of prime plus. You know what that means, Jerry?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
We don't live in a world of prime interest rates. We live in a world of prime plus, and that means that we borrow money at prime plus 1, prime plus 2, prime plus 3, and sometimes the dreaded prime plus 4. And that means that for those of us who have a little bit less of a track record and maybe not the sterling credit report, we might be paying 10% for short-term money right now, Jerry, and that's not good for small business.
No, it really puts a lot of pressure on trying to eke out the extra profits to cover that.
Especially when you put on top of that the extra tax that basically the increased fuel prices are on small businesses right now, right?
Sure. Plus, of course, healthcare costs. They continue to go up.
We were just talking about that, Jerry, with a representative of the National Federation of Independent Business, and she was pointing out, Jesse Howe Brereton was pointing out, you and I, Joan and I have reported over the last 3 or 4 years how healthcare increases have been in the 10, 11, 12, 13% range. But she was pointing out that that's a national average. For small businesses, many times it's 20, 30, 40% a year.
Mm-hmm. That's a real burden, obviously.
Well, and you add all that together, and you see why, when the Fed raises rates as they have this week to fight inflation, you know, there's been some articles written, and perhaps you've written about this yourself, where the Fed is focusing on concern for a little bit of a weakening economy, but also concerned about inflation. Well, we found out Tuesday which side they're more concerned about, didn't we?
That's for sure. They continue to signal that they're concerned about inflation, and they think that even with interest rates where they are now, after their latest increase, they still think that they're in their phrase, accommodative, which is a signal that they're going to continue to raise interest rates unless the economy really heads south. We think that the current quarter is going to be weaker than the first quarter, which came in at a little over 3%.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. The Fed has signaled that they're more concerned about inflation down the road. Probably not so much currently, but, you know, it comes with a little bit of a lag. And so it would not be surprising to see the Fed funds rate and the prime go up another full percentage point by the end of the year.
Mm. Well, you know, Jerry, if you plot the Fed's activity with regard to rate increases and decreases over since 98, which is kind of when I've been tracking it pretty steadily, if you plotted that out on a scale, you would see that it really looks like a roller coaster.
Mm.
It's almost like they only know how to raise, and then they only know how to lower, and now they're back to raising again. If you look back from 98, from the fall of 98 up to now, it basically looks like a roller coaster.
Well, yeah, they're probably a little bit cautious to move when they change directions, but you're right. Once they change directions, they tend to continue in that direction until it becomes clear that they have to change again, whatever that change means. I think probably, since you've been plotting, the one surprise probably was early 2001, before the recession was officially underway, where they started cutting rates. The end of the rate cutting cycle is long gone,
right?
And we're back into that slow march upward.
Well, it just seems to me that, and I'm not as smart as those guys are, but it just seems to me that there ought to be a better way than just to go, you know, eight up, eight down, and eight up again. I mean, there ought to be a little more. Can't we nuance this just a little bit more than that? Can't we be a little bit less predictable?
Well, that, you know, it's interesting. We talk, you know, you do and I do talk to a lot of economists, and they'll be the first to tell you that economics is not a science, or at least it's as much an art as a science. And making of a setting of interest rates and monetary policy, I think, is there's a little bit of art that comes into that, too.
I love what Ronald Reagan said about economists. He said, economists are people who look at things in reality and wonder if they could happen in theory. Stand by. We're going to be right back with our friend Jerry Adizak. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 20 after. Stay with us.
I feel nice.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our friend Jerry Adizak. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, those of you who wander around on the Kiplinger site and you see the various reports, the various reporting that the Kiplinger makes available on their site, if you've been doing that, then you recognize Jerry's name, because Jerry, you are very prolific in your contribution to the things that Kiplinger produces, and so I know people are used to seeing that, and you've been with Kiplinger now, what, about 13 years?
13 years, yeah.
Yeah.
13 years in April.
Congratulations. Okay, let's get into the first page of the letter, Jerry, and talk about the economy a little bit more, because Kiplinger says this week that the economy isn't about to stall. Now, that kind of flies in the face of some of the news, doesn't it?
Well, maybe we should define stall. the first quarter number, at least the initial reading of it, as your listeners know, it'll get revised twice. But it came in at 3.1%, which is down from the fourth quarter of last year, and
but still pretty good, solid.
Pretty solid. The second quarter we think will be somewhere in the twos, maybe the low twos.
Mm.
But we think the second half of the year will be a slight rebound upward, not a boom, not a big rebound, but a slightly higher ending the year a little over 3%. So whenever we write about the economy, I think it always, you know, it's slowing down, and so that feels uncomfortable. If you look at the numbers, we're slowing down to what the 50-year trend is. Right. You know, is the glass half full or is it half empty?
Well, what do you attribute the slowdown to?
Well, energy's played a big role.
Is that the biggie?
I think so.
That makes the most sense, doesn't it?
Well, it hits both consumers and businesses, and then, of course, the fact that it hits consumers makes businesses a little bit wary about inventories and concerned about whether they should hire that extra guy because orders had been strong, but orders may weaken, cut back hours maybe. So it kind of has a feedback effect where it multiplies, and the higher energy prices hitting both business plans to invest and consumers' plans to spend, one kind of hits the other, and they reinforce each other on the way down as they do on the way up.
Well, you know, Jerry, over the last several years, we've had a few spikes in oil prices and petroleum prices and gas prices, but they haven't lasted that long. In fact, we've had interviews on this show with members of the Fed, members of the Federal Open Market Committee when those things were going on, and they basically said, you know, we're not even going to consider this right now. We're seeing this as an anomaly, and that we're not even going to really pay attention to that, because as long as it comes back down, it'll be just a blip on the radar screen. But this increase has lasted long enough now that the price of the increase, in the spike, I should say, is not just at the pumps. Because as you know, Jerry, petroleum, carbon fuels, are the oxygen of the marketplace. And you close your eyes and hold your arms out and walk in any direction, you won't have to walk very far before you touch something that is made by or made with or influenced in some way with the petroleum.
Mm-hmm. That's
forget,
true.
Forget the gas in your tank, in the tank of your car. And so now these higher prices have gotten into the supply chain and it's raising prices. That's the inflationary challenge that the Fed's worried about right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the inflationary challenge the Fed's worried about, and it's the slower growth prospect that businesses are worried about.
Businesses, and of course, businesses want to sell to consumers, and consumers are getting kind of upset when they have to put $50 worth of gas in their SUVs.
Right, and a lot of that money gets circulated out of the country, so it doesn't flow back. And what is left here after we pay our own oil import bills doesn't quickly circulate either. I mean, if the consumers had that in their pockets, they might be going to restaurants more, planning longer trips, staying out more, buying more clothes, and all of that. So it really does have a dampening effect. I think that is the number one cause on the reason for the slower growth.
Well, and the thing is, though, Jerry, I mean, I've had a number of petroleum experts on the show over the last couple of months just to kind of focus on this a little bit. Some say we got plenty of oil. Some say we don't have plenty of oil. You can find people say it on both sides. But I don't hear anybody saying that we're going to get that much of an abatement in oil prices anyway soon. Are you hearing anything differently?
Well, our energy specialist, Jim Ostroff, thinks that, well, not soon, he thinks that prices will kind of level off and stabilize.
At what level? Well, Jim's a friend of ours. What level is he?
I think the latest look is somewhere around $50, somewhere in the range that it's at now.
How sick is it for us to be sitting here wishing for $50 a barrel?
Well, you're certainly right. I mean, a year ago when we hit the soft patch that proved to be temporary, people were talking about oil. Some people were talking about oil going back into the 30s.
Yeah.
And you're right now, if you said, well, oil is going to be no higher than $50 for the rest of the year, a lot of people would say, you know, wipe their brow in relief and say, well, thank goodness.
Within the last 5 years, we've reported on oil prices being so low that people who operate the small wells out west were talking about closing them up because they couldn't even afford the maintenance. And yep. $40 a barrel would have been horrible. Now we feel like we've had Christmas if we got $40 a barrel. Yep. Stand by, Jerry. Jerry Adizak, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We got more to come after these messages. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third straight year.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blassingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Wonderful here. And we're also visiting with our good friend Jerry Idizac, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And my website is www.jbsba.com. Hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Thank you to all of you who have done that this week. Jerry, one of the things that's a little bit perplexing about the economy, you mentioned earlier about how the economy is softening a little bit, but profits seem to be doing okay, don't they?
They are doing okay. The reason I hesitate a little bit is that they're not doing as well, you know, on an economy-wide sense as they were last year, whether you do the S&P 500 benchmark or you do the Commerce Department's number. But they're still holding up.
Well, you point out that you're looking at S&P's at 12% this year with a 50-year average of 7%. I mean, that doesn't sound like things are going so badly.
No, it doesn't. Although last year was about 20%. So
right.
you've got, again, it gets to that half full, half empty calculation. I mean, profits are still good, but they're decelerating, which is. Makes it difficult for the stock market.
Well, this is a case of where we say that, you know, we might not mind the number, but we don't like the trend.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. And it, you know, it's a reflection of the business cycle where you came out of the recession and then you had pretty good growth and where GDP was up 4.4% last year and that flowed into profits. But you're right. The profit picture is pretty decent, which sort of removes the sting of the higher business costs that we talked about early in the hour. At the other hand of that, of course, with a two-handed economist, is that as you mentioned, the trend isn't so favorable because of the profit increase slowing down. The costs, business costs, aren't slowing down as we mentioned.
Right.
Cost of money, cost of oil,
cost
of healthcare.
And small businesses I promise you, small businesses aren't feeling as profitable this year as they were last year because of all the other things that we've been talking about, with interest rates going up, with petroleum going up and feeling the sting of the higher petroleum products prices in the products that they buy. And now it seems that consumers, according to you guys, that consumers may be, and we're seeing this in other reports, Jerry, and that's the consumers are becoming a little less excited about the economy, aren't they?
Yeah, well, again, it's the gas prices. I mean,
yep.
The gas prices, I think, are up something like 25% since the beginning of the year. And as you mentioned earlier, when you drive into the gas station and you're putting an extra $10, $20 or whatever into your tank than you did a couple of months ago, it's enough to make you cranky.
Absolutely, no question about it. I have friends in that business, and they say that they, you know, basically they're just the retailers, and they're getting a lot of grief from their customers. Speaking of fuel, though, Jerry, let's move over to page two and talk about the energy bill that the president is trying to get through Congress right now. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, he's been trying for some time, and it's certainly been a high priority for various business groups, the U.S. Chamber, National Association of Manufacturers and others want the energy bill to pass, particularly the long, much-debated provision to drill for energy in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which won't turn around our energy situation, but as the people who are in favor of that say that it would provide some more domestic-based oil, which would long-term, medium-term, and long-term help ease the import problem that we face.
And, you know, Jerry, I'm sorry. I want to apologize to my audience because, unlike CNN, I can't show the little reindeer running across the tundra. I can't show the pristine mountains, which we don't know for sure where those shots were taken. CNN leads us to believe that they're taking on the very spot where we're going to drill for oil in the Alaskan Wildlife Management Area. And so, you know, you've seen those, Jerry, I'm sure, where every time they mention the energy bill, every time they mention drilling in Anwar, they show those little, the same little reindeer, and they're always looking like they're running away from something, like those from away from those mean old Republicans or something. I'm sorry I don't have the visual effects there.
Well, I think you've captured it quite well.
and hopefully with not too much sarcasm.
No.
But an appropriate amount of sarcasm, I hope.
Yeah. That is one provision of the bill that would also pave the way for faster construction of power lines and give some tax breaks for exploration.
We heard the president speak last week, and this is a big deal to him. And I think it's important to America. If we're ever going to get close to being less dependent upon foreign oil production, we got to drill at home, folks. 22, stay with us. We'll be right back.
What is this? Baby, maybe she's in need of a kiss.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, little foreigner for you. Jerry Eidesack is with us. He's rocking and rolling with us today. And Jerry, Kiplinger has an outstanding website, kiplinger.com. They have outstanding publications that I've been telling my audience about for a long time. You guys don't pay me anything to say this. I just want my audience to know about you, about your publications. The letter, the Kiplinger letter, has been around since 1923. Jerry, you haven't been with them quite that long, I know, but
not quite.
But the letter is the weekly publication. That's the one we work off of every week. And then there are three biweekly letters: the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then you guys got a magazine too, don't you?
Yes, the monthly Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Yeah, and that's.
We have two websites too. We have the letters that you mentioned, the material from them, plus longer articles. Plus a lot of tables and charts, is at the www.kiplingerforecasts, plural one word, kiplingerforecasts.com. And the magazine and personal finance information is at www.kiplinger.com.
Right. And folks, it's worth subscribing to Kiplinger to get Jerry's columns, because he does good work, and Jerry, I've enjoyed your work for a long time, and I appreciate you making it available to us.
Well,
so folks, and by the way, folks, you can subscribe to all these publications at those websites, and don't forget the 30-day free trial. Jerry, a lot of people don't know this. I worked hard to get that 30-day free trial.
Well, yep. we think if people give us a try, they'll stick around.
I think so too. The energy bill that the president's trying to get through. Are you predicting? Is our buddy Jim Ostroff predicting that it will happen this year?
Yes, we think that it will. And as I said, it's got some tax breaks in there and provisions for faster construction of power lines. Homeowners who install energy-efficient windows and doors will get a tax credit up to 20%. As the president said, it's not going to, you know, passage of it isn't going to automatically mean a drop in the price of oil or gasoline, but it's a little bit here and a little bit there, and it's kind of stitched together, and it's kind of an effort to make a longer-term approach toward easing some of the burdens that we have that causes us to import so much.
Well, we've got to do something, because in the last year or so, Jerry, Joan has reported on the show that over the next 10 years, our dependence upon foreign oil is not going down, it's going up.
Well, that's true. And, of course, part of the problem is in the last 20 years, businesses have done a superb job of becoming more energy efficient,
exactly.
Being able to produce more with less energy. But we consumers continue to buy more gas-guzzling cars. I mean, we're in love with that, and we drive. We have a big country, and we like to drive. It's not a situation like Europe where they have an efficient train system.
Right.
So, I mean, we've kind of, that's who we are. And
public transportation is not the long suit of most of America, is it?
No, it isn't. And, you know, I mean, people have, you know, the critics have highlighted that, but I mean it's a reality of life. It hasn't really changed over the last couple of decades, and it's not going to change. So we have to take the measures that we can on the production side, because the demand is still going to be there.
Well, I think what we've got to do is that we've got to do two-pronged effort, Jerry. We've got to become as energy self-dependent as we can be, less on foreign sources, even though we're not ever going to get completely away from that. And we've got to find alternative propulsion systems, don't we, and fuels.
Yeah. We do. And, I mean, Jim's written a lot about the need to...
Jim Ostroff,
about how we haven't had an new oil refinery in, I guess, some 25, 30 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Natural gas facilities. We don't really have an effective energy policy.
Well, I was reading the other day, too, that liquefied natural gas is much more an opportunity right now, and yet the environmentalists won't let us increase the number of ports that will accept liquefied natural gas.
Well, you've got concerns about safety and security, and that debate is.
But you can't live your life. You take steps, Jerry. You can't live your life, covering up on things like that. You've got to live your life and take risks, but you also take steps to prevent them.
Well, that's true, I think that'll ultimately be, there'll be some kind of compromise or arrangement worked out where the critics who are talking about safety get some satisfaction, while at the same time we get the construction of the LNG
right
facilities. There's going to have to be some give and take on both sides, because we need the facilities, but you can't ignore the safety.
Right, that's exactly right. Well, but that's the same thing that we know that we can die in a car wreck, but we still drive cars. We just take steps. We buckle up. We drive defensively. We buy safer cars, and that kind of thing. And so we got to do the same thing with these other areas. Jerry, I know you have to go a little early because you got a meeting to go to downtown Washington D.C. I want to thank you for sitting in for Joan Pry today. Well done today.
Well, thanks, Jim. I sure enjoyed it, and I hope we can do it again.
I promise you we will. Jerry Idizac, ladies and gentlemen, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Thanks, Jerry. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Have a good day, Jim.
We'll see him. He'll be back, folks. Next time Joan has to go somewhere, Joan Pry, we'll get him back in here. Quick break. It'll just be you and me for just a few minutes right after these messages. I think you can handle it. Tim Till, stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate, and it's just you and me. I want to wrap up a couple of things that Kiplinger reported on this week that I think you and I need to pay attention to. Remember earlier in the year when we reported about the new manufacturing deduction that's coming out? Remember, and I've been talking about this now for a couple of 3 months. This is a kind of a looser interpretation of what manufacturing is. This is an extra deduction that you can take. Let's see, what does it say? Deduct 3% of net income from U.S. production activities, including manufacturing, construction, and farming. But the issue here is that the interpretation of what is manufacturing has become very broad, and it includes a lot of areas that you and I would never have thought about before. And so the term manufacturing is becoming a lot more, it's being defined loosely these days, as of 2005. Well, Kiplinger reports that number is 3% now. It's scheduled to go to 6% next year and to 9% in 2010. But I'm saying this to you for two reasons. Number one is to remind you about this. I want to make sure that when you do your taxes in 2005, that you know about, or you do your tax planning, I should say, that you know about this. Ask your CPA, ask your tax preparer about this. Become more familiar with it and see if you qualify. But the news that Kiplinger is reporting this week is that Congress is concerned that we'll play fast and loose, and that's Kiplinger's words, with these rules and claim tax deductions for non-qualifying activities. And so they're concerned that they might take this away from us. Well, you know, I'm not concerned about that because the law makes it makes this interpretation very broad. But anyway, who knows? The government giveth and the government taketh away. So pay attention to this manufacturing deduction, this manufacturing allowance that you may be able eligible for, and be sure to ask your preparer, your tax professional, those people who are helping you with your tax planning. Be sure to ask them about that and see if you qualify. Another thing that the Kiplinger talks about is that they believe that the Republicans will keep control of the Senate in 2006, but that the Democrats might pick up a few seats, not enough to get the majority back, because they'd have to get six, I think, to get that. But they point out a few areas where they might be a little bit in jeopardy. They talk about Rick Santorum's seat in Pennsylvania. They also talk about Lincoln Chafee's seat in Rhode Island might be vulnerable. He's a Republican. As my friend Steve Moore calls him, he calls him a rhino, Republican in name only. I call him Leaping Lincoln because we never know where Leaping Lincoln's going to wind up in his votes. Is he going to side with the Republicans? Is he going to be side with the Democrats? Or is he just going to be a milquetoast and kind of vacillate in the middle? My three least favorite members of the Senate are Jumpin' Jeffords, which, as you may remember, Jeffords from New England state he's from. He actually became an independent a few years ago, having been a Republican. Leaping Lincoln, I just told you about him, and now vacillating Voinovich. Voinovich is the guy who basically didn't show up for a week to hear the testimony in favor of John Bolton, the nominee for UN ambassador from the United States. Didn't show up for that week, but he did show up for the week when they were detracting, when they were saying not nice things about John Bolton, and he allowed that to influence his attitude about John Bolton, and basically derailed the nomination for a time of John Bolton. And so my three least favorite senators now are Jumpin' Jeffords, Leaping Lincoln, and Vacillating Voinovich. And so, which brings me to the next point, and that's what Kiplinger calls a divided GOP. And they talk in the letter this week about how the president is suddenly confronted with a divided GOP. Well, you know what? That's what happens in the GOP. One of the things you don't find that too much in the Democrats, you don't find a very divided Democrat party. They pretty much stay on message. They don't wander off the reservation too much. And so that's the reason, one of the reasons why I say when it comes to the game of playing politics, the Democrats are better at it than the Republicans. It's time to go. I've got to wrap it up. I've enjoyed being with you today, as always. And we got a lot of stuff coming up for you the rest of the week. And next week, I'll remind you, I'm going to be in Utah, Salt Lake City, and those parts out there. Looking forward to that as we make our trip out to Utah to work with some folks out there. And I will be broadcasting live from Utah next week. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and I want to remind you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.